Now, for Jan Marshall, life was pretty good. She'd worked hard, set herself up well, and was looking forward to a future with a companion, just as thousands of us around the world do. She turned to online dating for that companion, and that's where things started to go a little unraveled. Let's talk to Jan, who's joining us all the way from Australia. Hello, Jan. Thank you for joining us.
Hi there. How are you going?
Good. Where do we start here? I think we have to start for our listeners at the very beginning here. You would like millions of other people, Jan. You just wanted somebody to love, I guess.
Yes, that's exactly right. I had moved states and wanted a companion to explore beautiful Victoria with, so thought I would go online looking for somebody local. Got approached by somebody who was in America at that stage. According to his profile, a very good-looking engineer. I thought, well, at least he'll be intelligent. And as he sort of started to make contact with me, it certainly felt like he was an articulate man as well, and that was very attractive to me.
Yes, he's allegedly an English civil engineer who lived in the USA. And I guess, you know, anything's easy in hindsight, but alarm bell number one, you were looking for somebody to be with you in the country you were in, weren't you?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I sort of went back to him and said, you know, I'm over here in Australia. Why are you contacting me? Mm. And he basically said I'd go anywhere for the right person.
Mm. Yeah.
And I took that at its face value. Oh. I didn't know any different at that stage.
Why would you not take it at its face value, Jan? And, you know, the whole reason for you doing this is you're desperate to find somebody to share your life with. So why would you immediately start being cynical with them? And it's not human nature, is it?
No, it's not. It's not.
No. So you chatted online, you spoke on the phone, and you did a very sensible thing, ask to chat on a video chat so you could actually see this man that you were talking to. And what happened there?
It never seemed to work. By this stage, he was actually in Dubai on a contract to do some pipeline maintenance. Mm-hmm. I got him to get off Instant Messenger onto Skype, but whatever he did, there didn't seem to be any way for his side of Skype to work.
Right.
So that was very, very disappointing. He could see me, but I could not see him.
Right, I understand. So he went to Dubai and you thought, okay, that's fine. He's taken up a short-term work contract and he said he would then come to Australia to be with you. That's kind of plausible.
That's exactly right.
He's halfway there already. So that's when he started, I believe, to ask for money. What were the reasons he started to give?
Well, let me go back one step, because by that stage I'd been sort of chatting with him intensively for 5 or 6 weeks, and he had wooed me to the point where I had agreed to marry him.
Wow.
And this is what they do. They actually really say, you are special. We're destined to be together. Mm. I've been waiting for you all of my life, all of those things that a woman wants to hear. And and I took it on board and I agreed to marry him. And it was only at that stage where he'd got me totally in that love state that he started asking for money. And initially it was because he'd sort of miscalculated what he needed for his materials because of the hot weather in Dubai.
Right.
And, being somebody who wanted to be in an intelligent and open partnership with a partner, I agreed to that. You know, his money is my money is his money. He did supposedly have money back in England, but he couldn't access it at that point in time. So it was always a temporary loan.
The people listening, of course, it's easy to be clever in hindsight. It always is in life. I wish I'd done several things differently, but you know, you'd effectively agreed to marry somebody not only you'd never met, but you'd never actually seen.
That's correct, though I did have photos and I had been talking to this man 2 to 3 times a day.
Yeah. And where were the photos from in the end? Who were they, the photos? Did we never find out?
No, they would have been stolen photos.
Yeah. So
after I found out I was scammed, I looked at those photos online, did a reverse Google search, and found that those photos were being used in 10 different sites.
Oh, really? So it was a common photo that people used?
He was a very good-looking man.
Right, I understand. So you sent money. Sending money, of course, can be precarious, but I believe that you used all the correct methods to send the money. It wasn't a kind of, send me a bank bag of cash and I'll pick it up on a dodgy corner. You sent it in the correct way?
Look, I started sending money via the bank, even though I didn't know the name of the person I was sending the money to. It was supposedly the supplier of these materials.
Oh, I see, right.
That he needed. And, you know, that, of course, lulled me into believing that everything was okay. Mm. And then after that, it was via Western Union and even MoneyGram.
Right. Okay, Western Union, of course, is one of these things that we've done shows on this before. It's one of those companies that comes up time and time again when scams are involved.
Yes. And they have admitted that they are, you know, helping scammers too.
Yes, and making a lot of money in the process. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so one would have thought that once he'd completed his contract, that would be it and he'd be on his way to see you. But, of course, all kinds of other problems then started to get invented, car accidents, medical treatment.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
Yes. Well, firstly, it was he needed to pay tax on the business he was doing and he hadn't realised that he would needed to pay that up front. So that was quite a stint. Yeah. Look, I don't remember all the sequence of it, but then it came to be he had to pay the second amount of tax a fortnight later. And, you know, by that time he was being pressured. And this is the other thing that happens is they find lots of reasons for urgency and fear. You know, I gave him some money to pay his taxes and, of course, he was supposedly mugged directly on the way to pay the taxes.
Oh, right.
And he's you know, talking to me in the middle of the night, sort of being very contrite, saying I won't ever want to talk to him again. And unfortunately, you know, my instinct was to say, look, don't worry, I'll give you more money.
Where was all this money coming from, Jan? I mean, you're not a multimillionaire who's won the lottery, so where was the money coming from?
Initially, some money out of my personal savings. Then I was able to extend credit on credit cards. And eventually, some money I took out of my self-managed super fund, which I was actually not allowed to do.
Oh, right.
So they get you so hooked in that you will even do things that are illegal. I know many stories of people who've gone way beyond what's normal to give their supposed fiancé or lover or partner money.
And you know, obviously, now how much money it was. What was it then that, in terms of a total amount that you handed over to this man?
Over 260,000 Australian dollars.
And that, for those who don't know the calculation, is about £150,000 in UK pound terms. So a lot of money.
And then our tax office decided they were going to tax me on that money I took out of my super fund at the top rate and created an extra $76,000 tax debt.
Oh, my goodness me. So the money's gone, but as far as you were concerned, the man hadn't gone at that point. But then he told you that he'd left Dubai, and presumably he told you he'd left Dubai to be on his way to you.
Well, he, in fact, eventually supposedly got on an aeroplane to go back to England to get hold of his money back there so he could send it to me.
Right.
And it wasn't until 3 or 4 days later when, you know, my attempts to contact him, or he hadn't contacted me, and my attempts to contact him had not come to fruition, that I realised it was actually a scam. And by that time, I'd given him my last pay. I didn't even have money to buy food for myself or pay my month's bills of that, you know, for that month.
I mean, the moment you realise that I can't imagine, Jan, the sinking feeling that you must have experienced.
Devastating.
Yeah.
Devastating.
And so what do you do next? I guess you go to the police at that point. Is that what you did?
I spoke to family and friends initially, but the next time I had off work, I did go to the police, the local police here. They let Western Union know the names of that I had been used with me, that I'd sent money. And, you know, several weeks later, the news came back that that money had actually gone to Nigeria. Right. Now, I didn't send it to Nigeria. I sent it to Dubai. But Western Union told the police the money had gone to Nigeria. So that's when I realised it was very much a Nigerian scam.
And there again, there's another cliche. Western Union, we've had Nigeria. It crops up time and time again with these scams, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I know now is it probably wasn't one person. It was probably a team of people, doing the call center analogy, because what I know now, of course, is that all of the things he said to me were pre-scripted, pre-tested to get me to do exactly what he wanted me to do. Yeah. It's emotional manipulation at its most skillful.
Yes, yes. It's not just the one person. They're not stupid, are they? They've done this many times before and they've worked out what works.
That's exactly right.
I mean,
they use it against you to get all your money.
Well, they're professional fraudsters at the end of the day, aren't they?
Yep. Absolutely. Very skilled professional fraudsters.
And I guess then, at that point, once you realise that, then there is no going back and there's no recourse. I guess the authority said to you, there's literally nothing you can now do.
That's pretty well. Apart from forward those names to Western Union, the police did nothing else, and there seemed to be nobody else I could contact. I contacted a number of the police in Dubai, but they always said, go back to your local police force.
Right.
And I don't know what it's like over there, but certainly in Australia, the police force is not very supportive of doing anything here.
Who are you most angry with at the end of all of this? Are you angry with yourself, him, his fraudster mates, Western Union, the police? Who do you think is the most culpable in this that you would divert your ire to?
Look, it's always back to those perpetrators. They are the ones who set all of this up. They are the criminal fraudsters. They are the ones who set out to manipulate me. I do believe that during that time I was not in rational control of what I was doing. I do think that the banks need to be better at sussing out what's going on. I absolutely think the police need to be building relationships internationally to deal with these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's the perpetrators.
Of course, of course. And after the event, your life is now in a financial mess, and I imagine emotionally in a mess as well.
Absolutely. I was in grief for the lost relationship. I'm aware now that one of the things I did was totally cut off my feelings. And I went into depression. I spent a little bit of time writing down all of the story of what had happened, trying to figure it out for myself. But that didn't happen till a lot later. But for that following year, I would say I was in a state of depression. Even though I was managing with my work, the rest of the time I totally isolated myself. And I had some feedback from somebody who met me at that time and said I wasn't very friendly. And when I got that feedback, I thought, yeah, exactly. Why would anybody want to be a friend with me?
Oh,
look what I've done.
Bless you.
So the self-doubt and the self-worth goes totally down the drain with all of that.
Yeah,
can't
sure.
even trust yourself, let alone anybody else.
And I imagine, one of the things that we would do as a human being is we would turn to our friends, we'd turn to our family for some kind of support. But in retrospect, they would probably say, well, I'm sorry, Jan, it was so obvious at the time. Why didn't you see this coming?
Well, some of that happened. In fact, some of my friends did try and warn me and didn't quite understand when I cut them off. But, of course, that's another thing the scammers do is get you to cut off from your friends.
Of course.
They were mostly very supportive of me, though.
Great.
Having some good friends around that I could be open with certainly helped me. I did talk to my friends. And I know many people won't even do that.
But there are positives to come out of this. I mean, this was back in 2010 where this all began. You have now started a new group, and it's where people who have experienced an online dating scam can meet and talk.
Yes, I started that in the beginning of 2015 after I decided to go public with what had happened to me, and that was the first thing, setting up that support group. And of course, in that time, I've met many people with many similar stories and variations on the story too, whether they've been got caught by somebody offering them to get gems out of a country or gold out of a country or, you know, military people or whatever, whether it's love-related or money-related, they are just very, very good at adapting to the hot buttons of whatever the victim has and adjusting to that.
And, of course, the difficult thing is, and here's a really difficult question for you, Jan, if somebody had come to you who'd had that experience themselves personally while this was going on in its early stages for you and told you what had happened to them, would it have stopped you?
I think not.
That's what I think.
I think I was so far in there. You know, these were friends of mine who I totally trusted and who knew me, and I turned them away.
Yeah.
You know, so I believe that even and when I've talked to many people who've contacted me who have a family member currently going through a scam, I know it's just about impossible to break through to them.
Yeah. I guess it's like telling an alcoholic to stop drinking for an evening.
Yes. I don't know whether I like that analogy or not, but it's very difficult to get people to realise that they are in a scam-type relationship because they are so invested in it. Mm. They're so invested in the dream outcomes that they've built up around it.
Yeah. And in your kind of thinking this through a billion times, as I'm sure you've done now, what advice have you kind of distilled in your own head that you can give to other people to avoid it happening to them?
Look, I think if anybody is looking to do two things, either be on dating sites or even on social media, do not respond to people who are not local and educate yourself to what the danger signs are.
Yeah.
And I know that one of the current messages that is coming out, you know, even though the message has been don't send money to people you don't know, but see, I thought I knew this person. The message now is to slow down, think about it, talk with friends about it, and get some of that sort of bouncing off from other people, because if you don't pick up on it, other people will. So it's really be very, very cautious about what's going on.
Yes. And could you say hand on heart now, Jan, if one of these people were to approach you again now, you'd spot it pretty quickly?
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so, absolutely. There is a lot more education out there about scams.
Yeah.
I would certainly, if I was getting photos, be doing a reverse Google image searches as a very, very first thing. And I'd be really checking out the stories that were told and be aware of the red flags that there are.
Well, let's hope that whatever happens next for you is less traumatic than that, and we hope you have a much better life than you've had in the last 8 years, Jan. We really appreciate honesty and for coming on Let's Talk this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care.